Is there something that, well, I imagine there are songs that you've been working on. Is there anything that you were like, I don't know, guys, I don't think we should put that on the record. Maybe we should just like forgo that one there.
I think that happens naturally during just the writing process. Like it doesn't really get much further. I don't think it would get to the performance stage. You know, we'll entertain some idea that we know is a little too far and then pretty quickly be like, but we can't.
I think we all have this when chatting with friends, like, okay, that's too far. We can never say that in front of anyone.
Right.
Let's stick out the back a little bit.
We think it's funny. That's not a song.
Yes.
Yeah.
You guys have now, you've played South by Southwest. You've done comedy clubs. Is there a difference in kind of the reception from crowds? I mean, people at comedy clubs obviously are there to, in theory, laugh. I've seen sometimes where there's not, and that's usually
bad.
That's
also
true. But at a music festival, that's kind of not the case. There are some people that are probably going to see you at South By that have no idea what's coming.
Yeah. I mean, they're both fun in different ways, right? Like, it is really fun to see people not know what the hell is going on and then kind of discover it. We played yesterday at the Yeti store, which is, you know, for people that, I guess, camp or, I don't know, need thermoses or something. The audience was great in general. Like, they were with us. Everybody was paying attention. But on the outskirts, you can kind of see, like, they have this huge screen where you can, like, pay for stuff or, like, I guess, look for items. And that was kind of on my side of the stage. And so every now and then, I'm like, you know, I'm trying to make eye contact with people. I'm rocking out. I'm having a good time. And then I would see, like, a lady, like, I guess, paying for a thermos or something, like, looking at the screen. And then she would kind of gaze over to us and be like,
Wait a minute.
And then just kind of get lost in our performance for like 30 seconds back to the screen.
Yeah. Our music is very equalizing. So it's like, if we're not your thing, you're not going to stick around. But if it is your thing, you're going to like hang
post
out
up.
And post up.
Yeah.
And like, so it's fun in that way.
Yeah. I will say both reactions have been stellar. When we do a comedy club and no one there knows who we are because it's like somebody else's show or something.
Right.
It's great.
And it's all stand-ups before.
Yeah, like people are like, what the hell is going on? This is something new. I really love these guys. And we get a really warm response. And then we've opened for like rock bands that are not comedic at all, like Jukebox the Ghost. And again, great response. People like very, we have to be more specific. We have to say like, this is comedy. We are a comedy band. These are jokes, you know. But once we kind of all get through that, it seems like everyone's on board and we're just having a great time.
Yeah.
It almost feels like it would be even more funny to not say that and be like, these are very serious songs, you guys.
right.
This is an experience I've had about a ghost that lives.
We learned very quickly, Andrew, that like, we need to be so specific.
Yeah,
we have to just
over the head with what we're doing.
Honestly, it's better if we say it multiple times so that people have no doubt at all what's going on.
That feels depressing in its own way. Like, is that something that you guys feel are like, why do we have to do this? There just shouldn't be.
Like, I think for us, it's like, we have been listening to this stuff since we were kids, you know, Sandler and Weird Al and like Tenacious D and all this stuff. But that's not the case for a lot of people. They don't know comedy music. And so we have to keep that in mind too, that like almost every show there are people that come up, they're like, I've never seen a comedy music show before. This was my first thing.
Right.
So it's like important that we
let
label
everyone
it.
Know what we're doing. Yeah.
I guess that's true. Like it's weird how you get caught up in your own kind of experience, right? Because like it didn't even occur to me, like, who would not know?
Right.
Who would not know what Tenacious D is?
Yeah.
It's like everyone doesn't know.
It's,
you're
a lot of
comedy
people.
Music fan.
Especially with the success of like Bo Burnham's Outside that just came out. You would think, like, I mean, so many people watched that it would be like a concept in the forefront of people's minds. But I mean, I guess things move so fast now that it's possible that just passed many people by.
Yeah.
And also with like TikTok and Instagram too, it's like people making 1 minute funny songs, but like, No, we're a band. We're putting out an album. It's our record. It's comedy music in the style of Weird Al, Flight of the Conchords, Tenacious D. Like, it's comedy music in that sense.
It's also very good storytelling. Like, listening to the songs that you guys are putting out, like, I am very impressed with how it progresses as an actual story, because there's basically, like, two kinds of comedy bands. One that's just like, oh, we're being ridiculous for ridiculousness sake, and another which is, we've created like an entire atmosphere world around this one song that we have. I'm very impressed that you guys were able to pull that out.
Thank you.
I was actually thinking about that too, because, you know, we have different types of songs where, you know, for instance, like Shrimp is just
yeah
and but the songs that have done the best on Spotify and the ones that have the most fan engagement are the most storiest of songs.
Mm-hmm.
Olivia, Vaping in Vegas, and The Gym. And it's funny to see because, you know, a lot of comedy music is about like writing about like relatable things or XYZ, but like actually the ones that track the most with our fans are the most ridiculous and longest stories that we are just telling.
I think it's about being unpredictable too. It's like you don't see the story coming.
Yeah.
Right. Twists and turns.
Yeah, yeah. It's not like we're starting off the song being like, one day there was a girl and she lived and, you know, it's very much so like it sounds like a song. Like you think you're listening to a normal type of recording.
Well, even with something like Olivia, which is kind of the, thanks to South By's site, that's what I had access to first.
Right.
It's like, I'm listening to that and I'm like, okay, we're at one level. And then we get to the end and there's a whole other sub joke about sacrificing puppies to keep a ghost alive.
Yes.
And it's like, okay, now we've gone to another joke level.
Another dimension.
For sure.
Which is impressive in its own right, because sometimes there are things that are just like, this is the one joke we have and that's what we're doing.
For sure.
Yes.
I think that's one of the things. I mean,
that's a lot of the trap.
Yeah. There's several traps that, you can fall into doing what we do, and we're trying to avoid it. And that's one of the ways to avoid it, is to be ahead of the audience. You don't want them to be able to see where you're going with it. And I think that happens a lot, where it's like, you know, somebody's singing a song about fish sticks and 2 minutes later the song is still about fish sticks.
But right.
and
you're like,
hey,
I get the joke.
Right. If it's a great song, then like, sure, let's rock, you know, like I'm fine with that. But I think we're trying to push the envelope in all avenues. It's like, can we make the song better? Can we make a better bridge than we did a verse? Can we push it along concept wise? Can we give you a part of the story you didn't see coming? Stuff like that.
I've been thinking about a lot of this for comedy, because Just for Laughs comes up to Montreal, not this year, of course, because you know, fail. But I've been thinking a lot about like comedians and how it must be a lot harder to kind of do things, because, you know, if people want to get an idea of what you're like, they go and they watch you, and it kind of like kills the spontaneousness of a joke or something. Do you think that you guys kind of sometimes lose that with people that do know your material? Like they see you beforehand and it kind of like, it lessens the effect of the joke by knowing it ahead of time?
It's funny because it's a compliment that we get a lot is, actually, we got this, I think yesterday from a fan. We were like, I already know the joke, but I'm just listening to it now as a fan because I like the music. And I think that's sort of the X factor of our group, because we're such music focused people. It's designed musically to listen on a 50th, 60th time. And you can hear little things, and it's just a pleasing audio experience that I would just listen to The Gym and not try and like laugh at it. It's just like a funny, you know, it's just a fun sounding song.
Yeah. And I will say, things I see that make me the happiest at our shows is like when best friends, you know, yell the lyrics at each other because they've probably done that like several times.
Right. In a car or something.
Yeah.
Yes.
And now they're like living their experience with us.
Or like some shows, specifically in Chicago on this last tour, it was a mix of people who were diehard, singing every word, having a great time. Like they're just going to their favorite band's concert. And then the other half of the people experiencing it for the first time. So you're getting this weird mix of like chanting and discovery laughs
and confusion.
At the same time. Yeah, it's like, it's super fun.
CJLO 1690 AM. That is another part of the interview with Wolves of Glendale, who are doing comedy music and are very good. I wanted to cut in here right beforehand because we're about to get to a part where Ethan is going to head out to a work meeting. And so I thought I would tell you that that's going to happen, because you'll get to hear me abruptly cut in to this next part of the interview to say something like, I don't know, Ethan leaves, or maybe I'll make up some elaborate thing. Maybe he didn't go to work meeting. Maybe he's a superhero secretly. I don't know. And if I say it on radio, that makes it true. Anyway, here is where we start talking about serious things, and then we'll see where it goes. CJLO, 1690 AM, Wolves of Glendale interview. Enjoy.
Let's get into a serious topic for a bit here.
Okay. I have about 2 minutes, and then I have a work meeting, but I implore you to talk very seriously Eric.
Okay. So I'm sure this is filtered down to you guys that a bunch of artists have pulled from South By this year based on the sponsorships. Obviously, you guys are playing, so that's not applicable to you. But I'm interested to know, as a band that does comedy is also kind of used as sort of a protest vehicle of protest art. Mm-hmm. You're doing both comedy and also music. Do you think that that kind of has the same pull protest-wise, both of these forms that they used to, or is it less kind of like a, because there's always the talk about comedy speaking truth to power and things like that, and music changing people's viewpoints, but it feels like it's less of a pull than it used to be. Do you guys think that might be true?
I would say two things, and then I'll head out and you can say whatever you want. I assume he'll agree with me on these two things. This is going to be an interesting mystery. One, I think one of the mission statements of Wolves of Glendale is to bring people together, is to unite humanity via laughter.
A very simple silliness. Goal, unite all of humanity.
Just unite all of humanity. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just if we could make like a triple James Bond movie where all three of us are James Bond. I don't feel like these are far-fetched goals.
No, that seems right.
It seems about right. Three James Bonds.
Yeah. James Bond eyes, I'm pretty,
That's a good, if we make a movie.
Bond Beach.
Yeah,
oh,
exactly.
Great idea.
All the members are American, not Australian, of course.
Right, right.
Well, we'll and it's on, never explained.
We'll put on Australian accents if we have to.
We're on a mission. We have to go to Australia.
Yep, great idea. Number one, we try actively not to rock the boat via our songs. Mm-hmm. Everything should be as much as possible. You know, unless you're a guy with a loud car, I guess, you know, who can't laugh at yourself. We're trying to bring everybody together to have a good time. So we try to stay out of everything else. And then the second thing I would say is we're too broke to protest. If we have a plane ticket somewhere, we got to go to that place. because if we cancel, we're screwed. Do you agree with those two things?
Ethan left that day, and he was never seen again until that night when they played in Austin, and for every date on the tour. Let's continue the interview.
I actually feel that like comedy music is sort of the best way to get truth to power and all that stuff. I think our mission statement as a band is only like, let's be silly to be for silly's sake, because I feel like we want to be a break because I feel that a lot of comedy is divisive purpose.
Yeah, yeah.
Because our world is divisive and the news is divisive and the internet is divisive and X is divisive and the comment section of YouTube and all social media is extremely divisive. And so I think we want to, it's not that we don't want to be divisive or have like strong opinions on things. It's more like I'm so overwhelmed by all of that and I don't want to participate in that. So it's like, look at me over here in this like weird sideshow and we're going to make fun of like, you know, everyday things that, you know, so it's not necessarily like that we want to be clean or not push boundaries or anything like that, because I feel like we do in our lane, if that makes sense.
Well, part of it too, which is kind of interesting about the bands pulling out of South By, and I guess the world in general, is I will often make the joke of, do you remember fun? Do you remember having fun, what that was like? And I think a lot of people don't. Like, I think that's gone from me making that joke to it being like a, you always have to be on, you always need to be doing something to try and advance things. And sometimes you just need to take that mental break and just enjoy something, anything.
I know. It's going to be very interesting to see if the Senate, I think, actually bans TikTok, because it'll be crazy how, I mean, this is going to get too deep, but it's like, I think the government just wants to own our data and not give it to China.
I mean, that seems really very feasible.
Yes. So I think that's sort of the thing. But I'm curious to see what will happen with record labels, content creators, everybody that like sort of made a living being divisive or being a flash in the pan or just everything from TikTok, and see what happens when that's gone.
Yeah.
And everyone is like, what did I just do for 4 years? My whole life was on this app.
Better have saved your money, everybody.
I know. It's wild.
So you guys just put out this record in January. You're playing here at South By. You're on tour right now, which is kind of exciting in its own right.
Super exciting.
What's kind of the next step for Wolves of Glendale?
The next step is to write and record another album. So we take different things from the music side of things and the comedian side of things. So typically a band records an album for a year and then does a touring cycle for 2 years. But with comedians, if you write for a year, you tour for a year and film the special, and then you have to do all new stuff. So we're sort of doing all of that at the same time. So it's like we're on our first album tour now, which ends next week. Then we're going to take the summer to write and record a new album and then have that to promote for the next tour, which will be in the fall, winter of next year.
You're like striking while the iron's hot all points.
And then film a special at the end of that. So that's all for this year, which is like, it's wild.
That's way more than some of the like just bands that are doing stuff here.
Right. But that's what a comedian does.
Yeah.
So it's like, we are, in my opinion, a comedy act that has been Trojan horsed inside
of
a music act.
Interesting.
Like, you thought you were seeing a band because sound and look like a real band, because we are all trained musicians. However, you're getting like a theatrical comedic show that happens to be at a rock venue.
And that's kind of, I guess that's not lost with comedy. Like, the show is kind of part of it, but there is an additional layer of adding music to it that is like more of a theatrical kind of experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And plus, like, visuals and the way everything's presented only adds to the joke. And I think the big joke for us is like, why did you do all that work for such a stupid idea? You know?
Feels like my life. At
yeah,
that point.
Exactly. Like, I think that is the recipe for great comedy music, which is like, you wrote this song, you recorded it in a studio, you traveled all the way here, you got a backdrop, you sound checked, you did that all so that you could sing a song about taking a dump in a planetarium. This is so stupid.
I guess the last question I have for you here.
Yes.
Normally this isn't my last question,
sure,
but I figured for a band that does comedy,
okay,
this would be the one that would end it.
Okay.
Obviously you guys are a band, you do comedy. I now know that you're classically trained, mm-hmm, classically trained.
You are in the classical sense.
Not in modern training.
No, not in modern orchestral music.
What's the worst musical instrument?
The worst musical instrument?
Yeah.
That's tough, because I feel like any instrument played well is beautiful. There are instruments that just don't sound good when you suck at it. Like violin.
Yeah, violin is rough
to hear. Like a child practice the violin, nails on a chalkboard.
Yes.
But if you hear the first chair at the Austin Philharmonic play,
suddenly,
like, it's the greatest thing ever. I would say, because the bassoon is beautiful. The bassoon is a beautiful instrument, but it's honky. Of all the instruments, maybe the bassoon, in the classical sense, the bassoon is the worst instrument. Even though when an amazing person plays it, it's music to my ears.
What fascinates me about this question is that the fact that everyone that I ask it to has to take the longest amount of time,
yes,
to answer,
yes,
it. And it feels like it would be just like the again, I guess this is kind of the classic of,
yeah,
I've built up all this way,
yeah,
and here we are, the stupidest question,
yeah,
that could be asked.
Totally. Yes.
I think that works pretty well.
Beautiful.
CJLO 1690 AM, that was Wolves of Glendale, specifically Eric from Wolves of Glendale, chatting with me. Ethan was there beforehand, and I wanted to play another song by them, but I don't have the time. I gotta move on. Let's get into a weird kind of interview that I actually have no music for, and that is with Secret Green, a band out of Austin. They played at an unofficial South by show at the Lost Well, and I was so impressed by them that I was like, oh, you know what, it's time to do an interview. And so I did, because I have a sickness and a disease called interviewing too much itis. That's a real thing. Look it up. Don't look it up. So here's part one of interview with Secret Green from Austin. If you want to check them out, it is secretgreen_ on Instagram, @secretgreen_, of course. So keep it locked. Here's an interview with them, CJLO 1690 AM.
Hey, everybody. It's Andrew. I am down here at South by Southwest because, you know, I like to come and ruin everyone in Austin's good time. And I am here with three fine gentlemen who I just saw lay down a very fucking good set. I will let them intro themselves so you can put a voice to a name. And so, good people, tell the listeners who you is and what you do in your band.
Hi, I'm Jacob. I play guitar in Secret Green. Hello, my name is Benjamin Knight, and I play the bass guitar in Secret Green.
Hey, what's up? I'm Gregorio, and I play guitar in Secret Green.
Now, you guys are very good. I have to throw that out right off the top. I like to start off all my interviews with the same question because I like structure. What's one question you don't want to be asked or you're tired of answering? Strike it from my list I'll come up with as I go through this, and you won't have to answer it.
What does Slam's Eternal mean?
All right.
I'm not willing to disclose that information.
All right, fair enough.
The only one question I never want to hear is, do you want to start a side project with me?
Oh, yeah.
Damn it, that was question number two. Well, God damn it. All right, fine, I'll strike it. You won't have to do that. Okay. I'm going to do this as a real basic interview. I apologize. I usually like to do better than this. Tell me a bit about Secret Green, because before the show, I went to look up everyone on the bill, and I didn't really find too much about you. Tell me about you.
Dude, we let the fucking music do the talking, man. Like, straight up. Like, there's no other way to put it. Like, there's, like, I got a big pet peeve with bands, especially, like, here in Austin, that, like, put on costumes and fucking do dumb shit on stage, bro. Like, just fucking play your instrument, man. Just practice and get good and respect the crowd.
Are there a lot of costume bands here in Austin?
I'm not gonna say your name.
Because I'm in one.
I'm not asking your name names. I as someone from Montreal, I have no idea what the scene here is like.
Sodomy Cow, best band in Austin.
Yeah, Sodomy Cow's probably one of the only bands in costumes that I do respect. Because the music is better than the costume.
Yeah, I got quite the beef with those fellas. But moving on.
You guys have a new EP, so I hear, from a very reliable source, aka you. What was it like to write that? Was it something that you've been working on for a while? Is it something that came together quickly? Like, what's the deal?
We wrote an EP last year and put it out. And then we wrote another one, and then we put it out, and we did all of that really fast. Like, within less than a year, we're just cranking shit out, man. We're already writing the third one. Like,
we just kind of go to rehearsal and kind of hash shit out.
My boys are bursting at the seams with riffs.
Is there a reason that you're doing just EPs rather than just saving it and doing an LP?
Me personally, like, I want our, like, full length to be something, like, really, like, methodical and, like, meaningful and, like, well thought out and intentional. And, like, the EPs that we put out have kind of just been, like, a collection of songs we've been playing live.
Yeah.
Like, they're more like snapshots of, like, where we're at as, like, a band. Like, last year we were playing our first EP, and this year we're playing our second EP. And next year we're going to be playing the new dish. And we get bored with the old dish really fast, man. Like, we just keep trying to, like, outdo ourselves.
And also, EPs are just so cool.
Yeah,
EPs are cool.
Short and sweet, baby.
It's like the whole length of a set.
Yeah,
a typical set of ours. I mean, and it's just easier to crank out, like, 5 or 6 songs at a time.
You bet your ass when that full length comes out, y'all are gonna be like, huh?
Do you think that that is kind of the way that bands are going to be? Like, shorter, like, singles, EPs, rather than LPs? Because it seems... I've been talking to a lot of people who are in touch with the kids, which, you know, obviously I am not. I don't know if any of you are, but, like, they tell me that the kids like things that are short and to the point and maybe 30 seconds long. Is that kind of the thinking behind it as well, or is that just a welcome side effect that you guys are doing?
Yeah, I think it's all about singles and EPs, honestly. Yeah. Like, it's less about listening to the full album and more about, like, just listening to this cool song that you can add to a playlist of these other songs that fit that mood or setting or whatever you're trying to achieve. That's just how I see things.
Is that good or bad or indifferent?
I mean, I'm indifferent to it. I love albums and I love listening to an album from front to back, but honestly, like, if you want to get something out there, like, and get it in people's ears, it has to be a single entity.
Yeah, so, like, you gotta, like, think about people with short attention spans.
So everyone is what you're saying.
Yeah, like, not leave them out.
I'm down, obviously, for South by Southwest. I'm from Montreal. How much do you hate South by Southwest?
Well,
we're not playing it. We're on East Side.
That's not the question.
We're not downtown. We're on East Side, you know? And, like, that says enough, dude.
We don't want to participate in a system that hasn't changed for 30 years and just panders to people with the most money, man. I want people who like us to listen to us.
Right. It does not matter at all to any of the locals if it shuts the city down.
This is just another gig to us, man.
Now, as someone who's from the outside, did it used to be better, or is this kind of how it's always been? Because when I first started coming here, like maybe before 2020, something happened in 2020 and I didn't show up here. I don't remember what it was.
Sounds about right.
But when I remember coming down here before, there was a lot of like stoner things that were happening here. But I recall it being much more kind of not focused on metal, but including metal more. Now it seems like there's literally nothing going on. Is this my imagination, or is that how it's always been?
No, I think you're right. I think it's more focused on like the independent artists. Like it's all about indie music. It's not really like genre specific things. Like before, I feel like you could find like the metal festivals and the metal shows, and you could find like the rock shows, you could find the rap shows, but now it's kind of all just, it's all indie, it's all independent artists, so it's kind of harder to kind of sift through those.
The venues, like, that would be regularly partitioned for like a lot of those acts. Like some of the venues, they get overtaken by like different groups that are hosting like different-ish.
Like, I don't know, we're not taking fucking handouts, man. We just like do the damn thing, you know? Like, with or without the help, man, like, we're still gonna do it. Like, we're self-produced. Like,
yeah,
we pay for our dish. We work hard for that dish, too, man. Like, the dish ain't paying the rent. It's pay the rent and then rock out.
Well, it's been a while since I've been here. I was talking with Steve from Destroyer of Light. He told me that there has been a large kind of push in, like, punk and, like, thrash things. Is that what it's like here in Austin? What is the scene like here at this point?
It's honestly, in my perspective, it's like it's blowing up in every direction ever, you know? Like, whatever there is going on right now, there's way, way more of it always. And that's kind of like going with like how just Austin in general is growing. Like, it's oversaturated.
I mean, if we're just talking about those genres specifically, like, yeah, there's been like kind of a huge like blow up like across the nation of like hardcore and thrash.
Yeah, a lot of that heavier music's got getting like pushed to the front, and like people are caring about it now.
Like 2 years ago, it was indie rock, like psych rock. Exactly. That was what was like really blowing up here, and that's what kind of at the helm started like the 13th floor. Yeah, the 13th floor that venue on Red River. But now they're starting to use it for like thrash and punk and stuff. So yeah, that venue is like the epitome of what's been going on like with tastes.
Yeah, that's the thing too, man. Shit moves fast down here. You know, 2 years from now, like maybe people won't give a shit about heavy music, but like we'll still be playing. We're just gonna get heavier.
Yeah.
2 years from now, we're gonna be way scarier.
As people who live in Austin, let me kind of check with you, because Montreal has not done well after the pandemic as far as venues closing down and it being a much kind of sparser place to play, even though at the same time it seems like there are people who are more appreciative to go to shows even on like weeknights and things. What is it like here in Austin? Is it the same, and how has it been for you guys?
It sounds like at your place, like it's more of a consolidation of like venues, like just less overall, but more people that are willing to go. It's kind of the opposite here, I would say. Like, of course, there's been many closures since the pandemic, and like we recently just lost the Electric Church. They also went under. But I mean, there's been a lot of different places that are popping up. Like, there's a pretty like steadfast turnover rate for venues to come back.
That's true. Because you were talking about 13th floor, and like about a year ago, it used to be called Green Jay. Right. And I was like, we're playing 13th floor. Where the fuck is that? Oh, it's Green Jay.
Which used to be Beerland.
Right.
Yeah. Did you ever go to Beerland?
No. I mean, the places I've gone to are basically here, which I love the Lost Well. Lost Well is my favorite. And then, was it Dirty Dogs?
Probably. Dirty Dog on
Okay, all right. And then I think there's one other place I went to that doesn't exist anymore. And then I was really gutted to know that Death Metal Pizza isn't here anymore. That broke my heart.
I miss Hoax Death Metal Pizza.
Yeah.
Man, when I was like a high school kid, dude, like I couldn't get in there, but I was like, that's the coolest shit ever, man. Yeah. Like,
pizza and death metal
just hanging out outside the window, bro.
Yeah, straight up, dude, just straight window licking, dude. Like, let me in.
Wait, they wouldn't let you into death metal?
I was underage back then. Yeah. Dude, I was a baby.
What's some pizza place? Like, you,
it was
they
a fucking,
let you
well,
in.
It was a bar on 6th Street, too, you know?
Okay. See, these are things I don't know because I'm one of these dirty people from somewhere else who's come here to pollute your city.